comes meet the sea in a clapboard shack by a broken down tree.
There's a light in the window, just salty gals inside.
I'm not sure if they're witches, but you know that's implied.
Got the storytelling, ego swelling,
pillow talking, moonlight walking, sea hags.
Welcome to the Sea Hags Podcast. My name is Chris Jeppa.
And my name is Katie Norgren. With us today is a guest, a great friend of mine from the smoking crater of inequity that is the United States of America right now. My darling friend, Nikki.
Hello.
Who we will not be providing any, you know, identifiable information about because God knows what's going to happen in the next little while.
Yeah, it is kind of worrisome to be on the record as thinking thoughts, you know.
Yeah.
We're entering week two of Trump's America. Who knows?
Trump's...
Who knows what's going to happen?
It's...
Better safe than sorry.
It's a little freaky-deaky, guys.
Yeah, yeah. We used to, like, very much with impunity, just, ha-ha-ha, who cares, whatever. And now we're like, nah, we might end up in a gulag.
Well, yeah, I remember when everyone thought his candidacy was a total joke and there was no way he'd even get the nomination. And look at us now.
But?
Look at us now.
Here we are.
Here we are.
And, okay, so, like, I work in government, mm-hmm. in local government, and... A big thing is, like, you know, legislative change takes a lot of time. You really have to, like, go through this and, like, go through that. And the processes are there to checks and balances, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, in the United States, legislative change is happening at a breakneck speed just with executive order after executive order. And, like, shit's getting done. Laws are getting passed. Like, all kinds of crazy. And I'm like, oh, change can happen swiftly, but not like this. Not like this.
Never like this.
Yeah. I know a lot of people, including myself, are pretty frustrated by, like, how slow the pace was for, like, example, Obama to get things done.
I mean, yeah, because then you're like, I guess that's just how government works now, because everyone was, like, roadblocking, and it's like... As soon as you take those roadblocks away and everyone's just on your side.
It's more like when you decide to stop giving a shit about the roadblocks completely is more what it looks like.
Yikes. It's like, oh, these social constructs are apparently just social constructs and you can just do whatever you want.
Just do whatever you want.
So scary. So this is like a bit of a blah episode. Maybe we'll turn it around towards the end.
There will be some fun stuff in there too.
We were originally just going to talk about weed the whole time.
We can still talk about that. I think weed is very political, really.
True.
Like...
Yeah.
We got ourselves a couple of bona fide weed nerds here up in this house.
Weed spurts.
A little. I'm not a weed person, and so I'm excited to, like, teach me your ways.
Teach me about terps and the kush and all that stuff, that good kush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terps. It's all about the terps.
All about them terps. Them terpenes.
I don't know what any of this means. I'm excited to learn. Open mind.
We'll have word vomit, and we'll learn, and it's gonna all be okay, mm-hmm. and we'll drink our wine, and we'll be all right.
Yes.
Maybe. Well, for this episode, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
The duration. We're safe in here, guys.
In our little... We're going to turn the sea shanty shack into the sea hag's bunker.
That's a great idea.
Basically.
Yeah.
We were thinking...
Be a little resistant splinter cell.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You can come stay with us, listeners.
Yes. Or all 12 of you.
Yeah. Yeah, they would fit in here.
Start our own underground railroad.
We got lots of blankets.
Yep.
Lots of cuddly things. I could roast you up some sweet, sweet cauliflower.
Yeah, that was so great. We had, Nikki and I rolled up today, and Chris just had just bowls of roasty cauliflower
for
us.
That was so good.
Well... I had one of my favorite things happen this week was I discovered there is a new season of Top Chef that's just been happening without my knowledge.
I used to be really into Top Chef. I've been in touch with that for a few years now.
So there was like a whole, like basically half a season already that I just like binged for the whole week.
Nice.
And it just makes me want to cook and
eat
all the time.
What city is it set in now?
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh,
or South
cool.
Carolina?
I think it's North Carolina.
Yeah. Okay. One of the Carolinas. And it's, like, seafood and, like, biscuits and gravy and, like, all kinds of delicious business, so.
I know how you feel about delicious business.
Yeah, I've been making a lot of good, like, vegetarian-style comfort food, and that was one of their challenges, was, like, turn, like, a, you know, normal comfort food thing into, like, a vegetarian option. And some of these people did not bring it. They do not know how to use vegetables. They're so reliant on meat.
You could make biscuits and miso gravy and stuff like that. Like, that would be so delicious.
Like, so many different things. Someone made, like, an onion mushroom gravy. I'm like, totally great.
Yeah.
I would totally do that.
Yep.
But someone made spaghetti and meatballs with, you know that, like, noodles are vegetarian. He used, like, the spaghetti, like, the zoodles, the zucchini and the spiralizer, so it's, like, you didn't have to make it, like, raw vegan.
Yeah.
So you could have still had spaghetti and made, like, meatballs out of, like, delicious, like, lentils and mushrooms and walnuts, like, right? Super good. But he took a melon baller to the same zucchinis that he was spiralizing and just made, like, wet like, zucchini rounds.
Ew.
No.
Like, slimy, disgusting, you can't get any seasoning in there. I was really pissed. I was like, righteous indignation.
Oh my god. You can have such good vegetarian food. We were thinking we might actually go to meat down in Gastown after we were done here.
Yes.
Because, we were talking about getting cauliflower, but now we've been cauliflowered to the gills.
Yeah, but you know what they do with their cauliflower is they fucking batter it and cover it in, like, buffalo sauce. Yeah. So, like, you should do that.
It's delicious. Mm-hmm.
I can get in with that.
Yeah, absolutely. It would just be filled with cauliflower. Just toots on two legs.
I know. The cauliflower even looks like a little toot cloud.
It does. That's what I've always said. I used to talk shit about cauliflower that it's like, it looks, tastes, and smells like farts. And it's like, yeah, don't worry about it. It's good for you. It's good to toot, and it makes you toot.
And it's also great if you actually, like, treat it with reverence as opposed to just eating it, like, raw with ranch
dip. Steamed or whatever, yeah.
Steamed vegetables, fuck.
That episode of Parks and Recreation where they go to the grocery store and people are trying to learn about vegetables for the first time. Like, what's this tiny tree? Can you eat it? Oh, no, this one's dead. And he's holding up a cauliflower. This one died. No. That's sad.
Oh, no.
Oh, Pawnee.
Yeah, actually, cauliflower is a really nice replacement for rice, too. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're trying to do, like, a low, no-grain, low-carb kind of thing, you rice it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's good.
Mm-hmm. I basically will put cauliflower in everything.
Or steamed and then pureed with butter and a steamed celery root also.
It's very much tastes like a, not quite like a mashed potato, but it's, it serves very the close. Same function.
Yep. Or like cauliflower, I guess, yeah, probably steamed and then like with a little like pepper and stuff like that and make sort of like an Alfredo sauce.
I'm suddenly reminded of Bubba Gump with all the shrimp.
Shrimp.
Talking about cauliflower. steamed cauliflower, mashed cauliflower.
The first time I had cauliflower and I liked it, I think my mom steamed it, or she steamed it in a little bit of like milk and just mashed it into like a sort of a slightly wet puree, which doesn't sound very nice, but it was seasoned really well. Mm-hmm. And it was just sort of like put on a plate and then a piece of fish that was breaded with pistachios yes. on top.
Oh
it was
God.
Really like, yeah, that
put
was
that in my face.
I'm into that right
I'll make
now.
That for you if you want.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah, I will. I fucking will, though.
You treat me so good.
I love that you episode that you guys recorded at your parents' house.
Oh, did you listen to that? What a shit show that turned out to be. It ended up being the first night I ever threw up in like 5 years.
And now you're just like on that barf train.
Now I'm on the barf toot toot. Here I come. That was a fun. So you actually listened to that. You get a medal for that.
Yeah.
Did you get to the part where we sang at the end?
I don't know if I got all the way to that part. No.
I've been putting little secret Easter eggs after the credits a lot recently.
Oh,
so
I
people
have pay
been
more attention.
Like, you gotta listen to the whole fucking outro.
Oh my god, even I don't do that, so I've been missing out on this.
I know, it's my secret present to everybody.
Your secret present to Meredith.
I drive so much for my job that I'm listening to a lot of podcasts. I mean, I've always listened to, like, Dan Savage and, like, This American Life, but my podcast menu has grown quite a bit in the last few months.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're very honored to have even the smallest part of that.
Well, yeah, and this is my first podcast recording ever.
Have you been on, you've been on the radio before, though, haven't you?
Yes.
For weed?
Yes.
Yes.
But that was when I lived in Texas, so that was a pretty long time ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Talking about weed on a Texas radio station?
Yeah.
That's kind of ballsy.
Well,
that's, you might say that's, you cowboyed up.
Well, I was participating in, like, some activist stuff with, Texas Normal, which is, like, the Austin branch of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
Normal.
So we like were, this was a good... 8 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago, we were trying to get a bill passed that would just allow you to use your doctor's recommendation for cannabis as an affirmative defense in court. So if you got busted for possession and your doctor said, well, you're going through cancer, weed will help you, you could use that in court, like, to help defend yourself. We couldn't even get that passed, sadly.
Wow.
We tried, like, three
wow.
times. But yeah, a few of us were on, like, one of the local radio stations to talk about, like, our day of action at the Texas Capitol.
Wow. That's impressive. Yeah, to be a stoner in a southern state like that is... pretty gutsy.
Well, and I fully realized that I benefited from white privilege, too, because, I mean, we would just walk around downtown Austin smoking weed, like, relatively openly in the alleys and stuff like that, and, I mean, the worst thing really that would happen is you might get a ticket if a cop walked up on you.
Or make you throw out your shit.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they could arrest you if they wanted to, but in Austin, at
but
least,
if you're white.
Like, and if you're a resident of Travis County, which is where Austin is, they have the option to just write you a ticket rather than...
That seems like a lot less work for everybody involved.
That was kind of the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have less than an ounce and you're a resident, then they can just be like, throw it away and get out of here.
Be like, don't you be smoking that sweet, sweet Chiba.
Hey, yeah. Pesky, pesky rascals.
You little rascals.
But Texas still has a long way to go for sure. I mean, you can still be, like, if you have the tiniest bit of hash or any kind of extract on you, it's an immediate felony.
Oh, my
like,
God.
Any
yikes.
Amount. It's an immediate state felony.
So basically, I commit felonies all the time.
Yeah, and Texas so do I. Felonies. Every day for my job. Mm-hmm. Like, I regularly carry amounts on me that would put me away for the rest of my life in Texas.
Gotta stock those prisons somehow, man, or else how are we gonna get all of our underwears made?
Texas is a big player in the whole private prison thing. Mm-hmm. Like, Texas has a lot of them.
Shit's fucked, guys!
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Anybody else notice?
Well, I mean, it's something that, like, my girlfriend was reminding me about to sort of keep things in perspective, too. She was like, well, you know, I've been saying things kind of have sucked for a while. It's just that now we have this, like, shitty despot in power who basically is just ramming through with no, like, consideration of any kind of political norms at all these terrible pieces of legislation. But our previous presidents were the architects of a lot of the systems that he is now using to push these
very
things
so.
Through.
They laid a lot of groundwork, like, regardless of their...
Like, I love Obama. But he also helped author a lot of these systems that Trump is now benefiting
exploiting,
from. Bannon and Trump are both now exploiting the shit out of, which is really disheartening.
One thing that is getting me through the days is just like imagining that at any moment, someone in his inner circle is revolted and stabbed him in the neck, and we're going to find out about it. And
just,
I just like
just
to think
leaked,
about it.
Leaked all the information or something.
No, I mean just fully stabbed him, literally stabbed him in the neck.
Yeah.
Like actually like crept up on him and stabbed him with a knife in the neck.
Yeah.
Is that something I think about sometimes and think, because I think about it, and the way I think about it, it's not even thinking about it as like a person-on-person violence. It makes me think of that scene in Spirited Away by Studio Ghibli where the main character, the protagonist, like, pulls a poisoned arrow out of a god's back or something, and all this sludge just pours out of him for, like, hours.
Yeah.
And eventually, like, oh, you freed me, thank you. Woo, I'm flying up to spirit world or whatever. I, like, picture that happening. Just, like, evil blackness and, I don't know, like, border walls with barbed wire on them just, like, pouring out of an open wound, basically.
I mean, there are actually, there are a couple of representatives that are questioning his mental stability, like actually publicly asking if perhaps, just maybe, there's something wrong with our feared leader.
Would he be fit
leader.
To stand trial if he actually went to trial for the things that he's been
Were you
doing?
The one that was telling me this morning about the pictures of him and Theresa May and how she was having to, like, escort
hold his
him
hand,
around
yeah.
and hold his hand as he walked around? Because
he's afraid of stairs.
He can't handle stairs.
Oh, my God.
So there's all these photos of him holding hands, I guess, right?
He's never had to walk upstairs before.
He just rides elevators everywhere?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so.
That's, I just, like, oh, God, I got full body just, like, creeped out where it's, like, I don't want to pathologize anybody in a way. Like,
we're not professionals.
I have
no,
you know, I have no evidence, but at the same time, it's, like, there's something, like, to go off psychoanalysis, like, he seems just like a kid that never grew up and was just constantly rewarded and...
Yep.
You know, and then he just, like, actually can't really function in the world without a lot of help, and it's really scary.
Well, and I think that he is also, at minimum, very easily manipulated, and he is surrounding himself, particularly with Bannon, with people who have
Who is
agendas,
strong-arming a lot of shit. Yeah.
And they are fueling this, like, very populist and nationalist tone of all of the executive orders coming out of this office.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's big. We were talking earlier about how I was like, I'm trying to find some good things to focus on, so I don't want to shoot myself in the face.
Yeah.
I mean, I am really heartened by how much, all of this is galvanizing sort of like the activist and resistance movement in the States.
And bringing new people into it.
A lot of people who might have not really considered direct political action before are showing up, donating to the ACLU, joining things like, you know, asking like, what can I do? Like supporting refugee organizations. I was reading on Twitter that the ACLU raised $10 million in 48 hours. This weekend. Like,
yeah.
I mean, yes, his actions are making white supremacists very happy right now. I am also happy because there are equally, if not more, people who are responding in concrete ways to try and, like, combat that.
Yeah. My love to, like, all the lawyers that basically went to the airport to, like, get refugees,
a lot of calls
like,
for
taken
that.
Out.
Incredible.
Like,
just there, standing there with signs, like, hey, are you an immigrant? Do you need help? Like, I'm here to
offering
help
their services for free. I saw a lot of counselors offering a lot of services for free as well.
I would go do that if I was certified for sure.
Yeah, you probably, you know, we could in our...
Just go.
but, like, not to the States necessarily, but, like, it just kind of... to see, like, a whole bunch of lawyers, like, sitting on airport floors, like, working on case stuff right. and, like, trying to file paperwork for people just, like, yeah. on the fly mm-hmm. is, like, pretty. Like, those are our superheroes right now, and I'm really
absolutely.
Into it.
Absolutely. Yes. And seeing people who are very much, like, moderate before, like, being sort of almost radicalized towards the left because they're like, oh, hang on a second, like, this is what inaction, like, reeks, basically, yeah. is that this happens when, like...
You just let it slide.
And now, and... it being so close to, you know, Holocaust Memorial Day and all that stuff, like, the parallels are so unbelievable that people are like, oh, holy shit, like, this is what happened. So there is enough, I think, enough people of our generation, at least, that still got enough of a tail end of good public education to go, like, hang on, this is really fucked up. And people are starting to, like, think, like, oh, I actually have to do something. Like, I can't just sit back and do nothing. Mm-hmm. Which is, like, where I'm at now, because I'm very easily... It's easy for me to become extremely, like, placated. Like, mm-hmm. just... Because I'm very privileged and I live very comfortably. And I realize, like, oh, I'm going to have to give up a lot of this comfort mm-hmm. to help people. So that's what's going to have to happen.
What I liked, Morgan Page on Twitter, she posted a bunch of stuff around, like, new people are coming to these marches. Like, we need to, you know, once they're there, then you can talk to them about other things, like Black Lives Matter, like, queer issues, trans mm-hmm. issues. Mm-hmm. Like, if they're coming for one thing, you can kind of show how those things are all interconnected.
Right.
And try to really, like, bridge some of those, like, divided left issues through, like, larger political action, and mm-hmm. then to try our best to, like, amplify, like, the people that are mostly marginalized as right. well.
Absolutely.
It's complicated.
Yeah, the drive to sort of tell... The people who've been organizing on the ground for a long time, I think, are rightfully a little bit frustrated by the sort of fair-weather protesters that have shown up. But at the same time, they...
Hey, more bodies.
More bodies. And
welcome. Yeah. Come on in.
And, yeah, I think for me, a big important thing that happened to me was, like, getting called out at some point in my life and just basically not being handheld through some things. But I don't think that when you're looking at a larger scale that that is functional.
Well, and I think white people in particular are really having a hard time with people of color mm-hmm. or other white people even being like, hey, like, here are the reasons why traditionally feminism has been very exclusionary towards these certain groups of women. And here is why intersectional feminism is maybe, like, where it should be at. And, like, mm-hmm. you should maybe look into this. And
And I think it's up to other white people to sort of shepherd, like, woke white people, I guess, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. you know?
I
like,
mean...
politically aware and, like, engaged and, like, people who've been listening to, you know, like, Black feminists, Latina feminists, Indigenous feminists for all this time.
Right.
I think that it's important for us to, like, hold other people accountable, but to do it in a way that's kind and inclusionary and being, like, look, I totally get why you came out here, but we need to look at the, like you said, looking at the interrelatedness of it all.
Yeah.
My friend, one of my friends is an activist in Portland, and they have a very funny podcast, and they did a whole episode recently. Well, they had two episodes. One was White Women's Tears, and one was White Men's Tears. And it was just, like, all about, like, because they're both, you know, queer and people of color, and it was just all about, like, here are all the ways in which I had to coddle some white person's feelings this week, like, yet again, you know, and I felt like I spent just a few days trying to gently educate my other white friends about intersectional feminism and why is that important, and I was exhausted after just a very short time of that, and I, like, texted one of my friends who's a woman of color, and I was like, I can only imagine how tired you are. You've probably been doing this for years, and everyone expects you to do all of that emotional labor to educate them and all the ways in which...
tamper alley.
A different kinds of forms of oppression or intersect, you know, and I just it's a lot. It's like I was talking about earlier about how I'm like, I need to just pick a few issues that I, like, really want to focus on my energy, and I think that arguing with people on the internet is probably not a super productive way to do that.
I'm trying to disengage from any kind of political talk on Facebook, and I think I'm going to deactivate my Twitter for good. You had a really good idea for yours, which is just separating.
I've got, like, my personal one, and then I have my work one that, like, I was following a lot of, like, political organizations, and it's, like, my more partisan sort of Twitter, and I just started migrating people, like, from my, like, personal Facebook, which I mostly, like, followed comedians and stuff like that, just migrated them all over to my, like, public account, so it's, like, I only really check that one at work so I can kind of stay engaged in, like, what's happening, and then I check my personal one at home.
Just friends and animals and
things. It's just my close friends, basically, and they'll still bring up things that are important to them, but it's, like, I just don't miss as much.
Yeah.
You know, because I was missing everybody's, like, personal life things in a sea of panic, basically.
Totally.
And so to be able to at least see like, to take the temperature of, like, what my close friends are up to, then I, like, you know, then I didn't miss my friend being like, I'm sick, my family's sick, I need you, like, someone to come help make dinner. And yeah. I'm like, great, I'm over there.
You're such a good friend.
So, yeah.
I love you.
I love you. Yay. But, like, I feel like, I'm trying to figure out what you were saying, Nikki, like, you find a few things that you can focus on, and then if we all focus on a few things, collectively we're going to cover everything.
Because there are so many issues, and obviously we care about a lot of different things.
And so then you can't, like, when people are like, well, why are you caring about, like, this? Because this is the most important. It's like, okay, you worry about that thing, and I'll worry about this thing, and then, like, our bases are covered. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we definitely got to keep taking care of each other. That's always my biggest thing, is, like, what you're doing, by very practically taking care of people, making sure that people have enough to eat to have their, you know, roasted cauliflower bowls.
Yeah.
And stuff to make sure that, you know, we got that good fiber and vitamin C.
Did you see someone sent, like, 6 pizzas to the protesters at JFK Airport over the weekend? And then they turned the boxes into signs, which I thought was really cute.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah,
that's so great. I love that. I love the pictures from Staples and stuff that just show all the poster board just gone, like, woe unto the children who have science fair projects, right? But I just really like it. I like how involved people are getting. Like, I'm really hoping that my parents will start getting involved in that stuff. They've always been very good at volunteering for things, but usually events rather than this kind of stuff. But I think, like, they're starting to, my dad in particular is like, what the fuck is going on?
Yes.
But both of them, like, I texted my mom yesterday, like, what do we do? And she's like, I don't know.
But something.
But don't pay attention to the news too much. Kind of like, just basically, you know, check yourself before you wreck yourself. Kind of thing.
What I thought was funny, too, is that the question that I saw so many mostly white liberals wringing their hands about over the past week, is it okay to punch a Nazi?
Please
do. I mean, the answer is yes. I'm surprised that's even a question. I mean, I think punching a Nazi is as American as apple pie.
More so, even.
So I was really kind of somewhat bemused at some of the liberal hand wringing I saw on different social media platforms.
Well, like, raise some money for Richard Spencer's poor face. Like, yeah, raise some money for me to punch him in it.
It was just so poetic that, like, he was in the middle of talking about his stupid Pepe the Frog pin, and he just got wrecked. I mean, it was just all of the remixes of that video just like warmed my heart. I mean, it was just like this bright spot of joy and what was otherwise a shit show.
Yeah. We can simplify it all down to that easily and, like, laugh about it, but I think that really that is important praxis, is, like, just not tolerating fascist behavior.
No, I mean, I really feel like if you're a person who advocates for, quote-unquote, peaceful ethnic cleansing of a minority, really, or any group, I think that you should be a bit afraid when you leave your house.
Yeah. That was the inspiration behind my tweet earlier today that has my dad liked, which was, I just kind of thought that was really funny, which is just that
I miss you on Twitter.
You'll miss me on Twitter?
I'll miss you on Twitter.
I'll stick around for a bit until it's too much for me. Maybe I'll just keep taking temporary breaks.
Or just make a list of all your friends.
Well, and you can disable retweets, you know, so if you don't like, I mean, you can disable my retweet. I know I retweet a lot of political stuff. You can disable those things.
Oh, you can disable seeing other people's retweets?
Yes, you can. So that would make
your feed. So then you only get their original content.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's a really fucking good idea.
Oh, that will probably solve my problem.
Yeah, so you can tinker around with your settings a bit.
There are definitely people I love talking to, and I just love saying sort of dumb, irreverent shit.
Into the void. I, like, put a lock on my account, and I'm already going to take it off, because I'm like, I still do like being able to, like, tweet at randos. Like, it's fun.
It's a good time. But what I tweeted earlier today was kind of like, you know, I've never been an advocate for violence, but I've become more understanding about it lately, for sure, because I realized, like, oh, you know, nonviolence, I don't remember, is it Baldwin, I believe, is the name of the African-American, like, philosopher or scholar, I'm not sure what his name is. I know he was, like, a queer, like, Harlem Renaissance guy, I think, something Baldwin. Which is terrible for me, but it was like, if you're, like, nonviolence is dependent on your oppressor thinking that you have humanity, pretty much. This is very paraphrased, but, like, and if they don't think you do, like, if they advocate for your peaceful ethnic cleansing, or, like, literally saying genocide.
Yeah. Does the world really need black people? Literally, is what this guy said.
God damn it. Oh, well, yes, it does.
I do not want a world without black people. I don't.
No. I don't. I would like a world without that asshole. So.
I would like a world without white supremacists. That would be a beautiful world. Like, a world without white people would be fine. If that means, like, eventually people who look like me are phased out, fucking great. Like, who cares? I'm very pasty anyway. Like, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
But what I tweeted was just that, like, okay, I don't advocate for violence, and I don't really believe in capital punishment, but I'm sort of seeing the guillotine's appeal these days. Like
your tweet.
Like that was like I kind of I get it now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's creepy, but it would be pretty satisfying to load up Steve Bannon onto one and just slice his fat stupid head off. Fat part's not that important, but his face is just so disgusting.
He's got this really, like, Jabba the Hutt thing going on.
Just like, yeah, how can you look at yourself in the mirror and think that you have superior genetics when you look like Steve Bannon? Fat shaming and looks shaming.
Just really every day.
But their outside reflects their inside so well, and it's a tragedy.
It's absolutely true.
Every day I'm just like, what fresh hell is, like, going on now? I feel like I've been dropped into a bizarro world.
100%. Yeah. It's bizarre.
Yeah. I was trying to think of, like, some other sort of concrete things that I could do. And, like, I'm not a huge, like, group organizer. Like, I'm a much better, like, letter writer or, like, helping people, like, one-on-one with, like, advocacy.
Right.
But, and, like, I'm not really a big march planner either. Like, we kind of got burned, Katie, when you and I, like, did the slut walk. We had so much stuff to learn, and it really, like,
it was.
I learned a lot, and it kind of made me, like, not want to do any more organizing, because I'm like, I don't, like, another nice liberal white lady does not need to be organizing this shit.
No,
like,
we need to be supporting
organizers. But how can I support? Yeah. And so there's, like, a scientist march on Washington happening, and there's, like, a branch happening in Vancouver, and I'm like, okay, so a friend of mine from school is one, like, she started putting that together, and I'm like, well, Black Lives Matter was left out of, you know, the Vancouver Women's March, which was not great. And, like, my friend, who is one of the main organizers, is also, like, a badass scientist, so what a perfect intersection. And she's like, did you know there's a whole group called White Coats for Black Lives? So, like, great. They should be leading this march. And I'm like, perfect. And everyone on that committee was like, great, what do you need? Fantastic. As opposed to, like, wrestling over anything. It was so good.
That's really
good. So I was like, what I want to do for this march, though, is, like, everyone talks about, you know, it's exhausting. I don't want to show up to this week after week. What do we do? And people are trying to build connections with each other. I'm like, aftercare party for the march. Where can we do something? We can get people to donate money for space and snacks and just have, like, a chill-out, warm place after the march.
Oh, my
march
God, so you can get, can like, come to you hire some, like, chair massage and stuff like that.
Or something. So cool. Like, I honestly just want to call it, like, who wants to donate some time and, like, make some food and you can still go to the march, but then leave, like, an hour early to help set up this space, like, at a community center or something.
That's really, I think, where my where my praxis is going to be, is just taking care of people who are on the ground and stuff. Because, like, I don't think that I need to be the face of anything.
No.
If somebody needs to speak up for, like queer women, yeah, for sure. But, like, any other time, like, I don't think my voice needs to be prioritized. But, like that's the only avenue that I think that I could really have something to say and be, like, a worthy voice.
Yeah. So. I just think it would be really cool. I get, like, I love event planning and I love getting, like, party planning kind of mode on. So I'm like, you know, you get your community center, you get, like, a bunch of, like,
get your fucking canapes.
Well, you can get, like, there are big organizations that have some money that would kick in some donations for stuff like that. Like, you can approach every union or every, like, federation to be like, would you give us $20?
Yeah.
And then you just, like, buy hella snacks and, like, a big giant thermos of, like, chai and coffee and, like, all kinds of stuff so that people have a place to hang out after the march.
Yeah.
You don't really get to talk to people in those, like, kind of big situations. Right, yeah. So there's a little more, like, downtime, and then people can talk about their interrelated issues in, like, a comfortable environment. So, like, anyone that wants to help me with, like, the aftercare party, like, hit me up. At CLRZEPA on Twitter.
I'm just like, what the hap is fucking in the world right now? Basically. It's crazy. It's crazy. Do you have anything else you want to say about, like, all the bad shit that's going down since you have to live there?
There's so much.
So much.
Yeah. It's hard to cover all in a relatively short time.
Yeah.
Just like I was saying, I'm just trying to, like, pick a few issues that are, you know, of deepest concern and priority to me. And, you know, I might not really be, as much as I would love to be a badass Black Bloc Antifa and be out in the streets, like, smashing Nazis in the head whenever I have the opportunity, I think perhaps I should leave that to other people. And channel my strengths into maybe some other things.
We're too distinctive looking to punch Nazis in the face.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of my friends in Portland is, like, very politically and, you know, active and really involved in, she was involved in Occupy. Like, she's continued to be involved in a lot of, you know, pretty heavy street-related protest stuff in Portland. And She, you know, is pretty recognizable to the police and gets hassled quite a bit, even mm-hmm. though she's not really a minority at all. Like, just the fact that, like, the police can recognize
what known,
she looks like.
A known shit disturber.
She is. Yep. So she definitely, you know, from this nice little liberal town, like, the police still definitely give her a really hard time. And just, you know, I care very much about cannabis and access to cannabis, you know, free access to cannabis. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and the states that have all passed legalization measures have all come so far in trying to upscale these, like, recreational systems. And I am very concerned about the potential new attorney general because he is a direct opponent of legal pot.
If only he'd try it. He'd probably like be chiller.
Yeah.
Well, he famously, Jeff Sessions, you know, famously remarked that he thought the KKK were pretty all right until he found out some of them smoked pot. So, you know.
Holy fuck! That made me feel really gross.
And he said he swears that was a joke.
God, I want to see them just, like, and, I want to see their heads separated from their bodies.
And as recently as April of last year, he said in a Senate hearing that good people don't smoke pot. I mean, he's very adamantly against legal access. And so, I mean, I didn't think until really very recently that there was a real possibility that they could come in and just, like, shut the whole thing down, but it sort of feels like anything is possible in this current climate. I mean, there's a lot of people with a lot of money in the game, so I'm hoping that would be enough to...
Capitalism will at least bolster the walls a little bit.
Oh, yikes.
I mean, apparently California is exploring ways to see if they can stop sending money to the federal government because they are right? Basically, there's a Cal exit thing going on, like a push for that right now. I mean, I don't know if that will actually come to
because apparently they pay more taxes.
They're a donor
to,
state.
Because the economy is, like, huge in California. Yes. They have so many different industries and agriculture and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So they pay in more than they get back from the
federal
government.
Yeah, so it's like, I heard especially around, like, if people are trying to take away, like, sanctuary city.
That's the sort of the crux of the issue is, you know, the Trump administration threatening to remove federal funding from so-called sanctuary cities that refuse to comply with directives to force local law enforcement to enforce federal immigration law.
Gross.
I read that
Cascadia forever. So
yeah,
that's
seriously,
what I'm saying.
Cascadia,
I'm a Cascadia separatist.
Except for the white supremacist Cascadia
separatists.
They can
move one state over.
Just stay in Idaho, please.
Fuck right off and go stick your dick in a potato.
Some people include Idaho in the whole Cascadia thing. Mm-mm. I personally do not agree with that.
I think
it's everything west
potatoes.
Of the Cascades.
We got Pemberton. We're good.
Right.
I would really love to have just BC to Cali, like, just all together. Like, a big longer Cascadia than we originally anticipated. Now I'm like, just bring it all the way.
And then connect it all to Mexico, too.
Connect it all to Mexico.
Sweet, sweet Baja.
Yeah.
Sweet, sweet Baja Peninsula.
One of my favorite things in the world, as you know, Katie, is Topo Chico mineral water from Mexico.
I do.
I am upset about many things out of this administration, but by God, if they actually pass this Mexico tax like they're threatening to, is going to make my mineral water and my avocados a lot more expensive. God damn it.
I saw the funniest, like, somebody at one of the marches had, like, put guacamole on races and maybe white
people
will
care.
And then it's like, they're banning, like, you know, maybe avocados will be more expensive and people are, like, freaking out.
How
it's
much?
Like, oh my God, they did put guacamole on it and now we care.
How much does an avocado cost in the States?
So a conventional, non-organic, large avocado is probably going to be, like, $1.50. And then an organic
like
avocado
$2.
Is, like, $2. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's about the same.
Yeah.
They're so good.
I haven't had an avocado for a while because they're not in season. They're just, like, hard as rocks. Which, I mean, I just got to take them home and, like, shimmy them up with a banana.
Honest to God, the avocado that I put on our avocado toast yesterday was perfect.
That was a really good avocado.
I do not know how it was so good. It was not an organic avocado, and it is goddamn January.
It was great.
But it was so good. It looked like shit from the outside, and you opened it up, it was beautiful on the inside.
Aww.
Like so many good people, you know? Just like, oh, your face! Oh, the inside's great.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Actually, don't know that many people that are wonderful on the inside that are gross on the outside because everybody starts to look more beautiful when you know that they're lovely.
It's true.
Like that Sel Silverstein drawing.
They just glow with like niceness.
Yes,
I like it. So it's also Lunar New Year today, and we're coming into the year of the rooster, which like I was happy to read that my sign because I'm a rat. Year of the rat. And then Ox, which is my partner, those are the two luckiest, two luckiest signs this year. You're going to get the most rewards financially specifically.
Yeah.
So I'm like, dig it. But I was looking at some of the characteristics for the year of the rooster and like last year, the year of the monkey was just like, throw your poo at everything. Like
that's my year.
That's kind of what it was. Year of the rooster is you're looking for, it feels very Capricorn-y to me. So vigilance, hard work, perseverance, but then also at the same time, patience, serenity, balance, but passion, but vigilance. Like, I just...
All important.
I think those are really good. So it's like, we need to just, we put our heads down and we do the work for what we care about this year, and it's going to bring us some good shit. So, you know, as much as, like, astrology, whatever, I'm like, I'll take that as a mantra.
You know what? You are in good company, Chris, because we're all woo-woo as fuck in this room right now. We got some crystals.
Real wooey.
We'll do some tarot reading later today, maybe.
Ooh,
we can... I didn't bring any cards with me, unfortunately. Oh, you got
some? I've got, like, six decks. Like,
you got six. How many decks do you have?
I got so many decks.
Can I touch your decks? See, I feel like, okay, so I feel like we're turning a dark corner into, like, sort of a more fun corner at this point in the podcast, which I'm excited about, because I still want to talk about weed, and I still want to talk about mystical shit.
Yeah. I got that stuff out.
Because it's scary, but it's also, we have to let it galvanize us to be stronger and be, like, stronger together, you know? Like,
it's like I planned that segue.
Yeah, it's almost like you planned it.
I didn't. That's why. I'm just naturally brilliant.
You are so brilliant, and I love you. I just like I like to picture, like, not that I was ever her biggest fan, but honestly, she seems like Jesus now is Hillary Clinton. Like, I just want to picture her in, like, a fucking, like, Rambo outfit, just, like, army crawling under the fence to the White House, like, with a knife in her teeth or something.
To just, like, take him out Black Ops style.
I want so badly for him to just be dead. I've never wished someone dead with such seriousness in my heart, you know, like, just for him to just, like, stress out to the point that he strokes out at his desk.
I've watched too many CSIs, and, like, you just gotta shoot him with insulin into a vein.
Just shoot him up with some serious
and
insulin.
And the insulin dissipates back into their body, but if you put too much in, they go into, like, a diabetic shock, and then just look kind of like they had a little heart attack.
So, or, like, inject some air into him.
It's on a lot of CSIs, so please don't come for me. I might have a knock at my door.
Yeah, well, I mean, your passport will probably show whether or not you've been to the States recently.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess you could be inciting.
Yeah, I don't want to be encouraging anyone to do that, but I'm just saying. Do.
I'm really curious about what kind of notes CBP has on my info, you know, from when I come back and forth into Canada. Because, like, the last time I was here, you know, they always ask me, who are you visiting? Why are you here? Oh, I'm visiting my friend. Where does she live? She's in New West. How do you know her? The internet. And they look at me all crazy, and I'm like, live journal?
They have a classic.
They're always kind of like, oh, you're just like a funny, sweet little nerd is how they always treat me when I'm at the border. So, like, I feel like I'm still super safe to cross for now until, like, unless things get really weird.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I do want to keep visiting is the thing. Like, mm-hmm. I want to keep coming to the United States because a lot of people I love live there.
Right, and we still have so much weed to smoke.
You asking me what I'm drawing?
Yeah, what are you drawing?
I'm drawing Elmer, Tumblr monkey. Character that he's the fruit vendor, and he's just got, like, a baboon. He's got, like, the crazy nose. I don't know why I'm drawing him. He just soothes me.
That looks very therapeutic.
And Luna really loves him. So I was just thinking about her because she's our artist for this. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit drunk, actually.
Oh.
So I realize as I'm drawing, I'm like, this feels nice. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm drawing a monkey for some reason. I'm drawing a baboon.
Because we were talking about the year of the monkey, and then you started drawing him.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like a nice little smile. He's looking at a strawberry that he's selling.
That smells nice.
Well, we've been drawing a lot on podcasts lately. We had this drawing for Hillary that we posted. That was her self-portrait. And we put it on the podcast, and it's horrifying.
Have you told her about that game that we've been playing with Tessa?
What's that?
The Drawful.
Oh, the Drawful. This is a really great game that Tessa got. Have you ever played You Don't Know Jack?
Nope.
It's like a trivia game that I think started as a PC game because I had it in like 1998 or something like that. Like, I played
disc.
On a disc, on a CD-ROM, and I'd play, like, with my mom, and we'd really, like, because we love trivia in my family, so we were really having fun with it, and it's very cheeky and cute, and then it was on Xbox for a long time, and then Tessa got it, and you can play just with your mobile phone, just by logging into, like, a browser website, so you don't need to install anything, and this, so You Don't Know Jack, they have that game, it's just a trivia game, and you, like, buzz in, answer, whatever, but Drawful is basically, like, it's pretty much Pictionary, but made weirder. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, so you get something like, your friend got hummingbird saddle. Was one of she drew a dick, which
she
it was
just
not.
She drew a dick. She was like, whatever.
Whatever, I'll just draw a dick. And anyway, everybody sees the drawing and they have to guess what it is. And so they'll like, but it doesn't have to be a serious guess. It can be like a ridiculous guess that just sort of makes use of whatever, however bad the drawing is. Because you draw it on your phone, it looks like shit.
Yeah.
So,
So it comes up, you put your thing in, and then everybody has to decide what the actual thing is. But you could guess. So it's like a cross between Pictionary and Balderdash.
Oh, fun.
So it's like a perfect really combo fun. Of both things, and it's really fun, and I love drawing it because I get to draw like really weird little stick people, which I'm very good at. So.
And you get to draw what your little like character icon looks like.
Yeah.
So nice. That be
mine was a dick with boobs at one point. It was a dick with boobs, and then it was just my face with tentacles all
like
around
it. It was like a Katie octopus. Kinda it had like the hair and everything. It was pretty awesome.
It looked great, but my favorite drawing I did was WTF grandma.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck, grandma? So I just drew grandma knitting and shitting on a cake. So I drew like an old lady, and I was like, she gotta be knitting because no one will know otherwise. So she's knitting and then pooing on a birthday cake. So that's how the game works.
I would have drawn Marc Maron kissing your grandma.
Don't kiss my grandma, Marc Maron. She's been dead for so many years.
How many years?
Well, it depends on what grandma.
40 years.
She's been to your crying about my dead grandma.
Well. I finally watched San Junipero.
Oh!
And so, like, you know, I've been having some sad stuff lately, and I just have been feeling really pent up emotionally. I found all my tears, you guys.
I found it
at San Junipero.
Didn't that help you?
They were hiding in San Junipero is what was happening.
I fucking bawled.
Didn't you feel so good after,
it
though?
Was
like,
beautiful.
It was beautiful.
I slept better than I have in a long time last night.
That's so good
to
hear,
what
honey.
What a cute episode. Yep.
It's so, like,
Black Mirror.
I imagine some people, like, I don't want to reveal the twist, but some people would be like, well, I don't know, it seems really sinister. I'm like, no, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I want things to be.
And it's really the only episode of Black Mirror
that's
not a total beatdown.
Yeah.
Where you're not like, oh, God, people are horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, man, it really felt great.
I'm so glad you got your tears out, or some of them anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more living in there.
There's gotta be.
Yeah.
Have you seen the protest sign that says this episode of Black Mirror sucks?
Yes.
Yeah, Charlie Brooker retweeted it.
Love it.
I love him.
It's true.
I watched his yearly wipe. Have you seen that? It's on YouTube. Somebody uploaded it. It's basically just him reviewing the year, going like, oh, what the fuck is happening? And I was watching it with Tessa, and we literally had to turn it off because it was so upsetting. Because we were just like, oh, no. Like, I was still laughing, but she was really distressed by it.
Yeah.
Because I have a very dark sense of humor, and I also, like, have a very strong survival instinct.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since I got on antidepressants. I'm just kind of like, well, we're going to keep on going and see what happens.
We're doing this.
I'm just like crazy mom driving a minivan with like 30 million Canadians in the back, like, we're gonna figure this out somehow, motherfuckers.
Dude.
Like, who's hungry?
We're
going to,
like,
Wendy's.
I feel more like Charlize Theron from Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, yeah.
Like, let's fucking do this.
Well, that's exactly pretty much, like, with a bit more of a maternal instinct is kind of how I'm feeling about it. But I really want to rewatch that again.
Yeah.
Because I rewatched with past guest Jen Clark, we got together and watched Inglourious Basterds this week, which was so satisfying to see. Hugo Stieglitz, we see you're an amateur at this Nazi killing business. We wanted to ask you if you want to go pro. It's like, oh, it's so sexy. Stab those Nazis in the face.
I love
like
all the Inglourious Bastards memes going around. It's
so sad.
I've never seen the movie because I'm like, ooh, violence. But
I will watch it with you.
I think
again.
I think I'm ready to watch it.
I would watch it again today, even though I watched it so recently. Like, it's literally my favorite movie. So
she
I
can warn
you
before
anytime.
The really gnarly parts.
Yeah, I'm a big kid. I can try to figure it
There's
out.
There's only a few really gross parts that I would recommend turning away from. For me, it's everything's fine except when they actually are scalping people.
Yeah,
then
same.
I can't
same.
Take that.
Like,
but
yeah.
Everything else, like the smushing of the baseball bat and everything, was fine because it's a Nazi and you don't care about them.
Yeah, great.
It's just like,
if anyone deserves to have their humanity denigrated,
it's a Nazi.
Fuck 'em.
We in the Nazi killer business, and cousin, business is a booming. I just love it.
I think that's probably my favorite Brad Pitt part.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, with his weird pasted-on mustache.
Yeah.
So creepy.
That's so good.
Aldo Rain.
I think that and the gypsy boxer in Snatch are, like, my favorite roles of his.
Ah, yeah.
He's a traveler, right?
Pikey.
Yeah.
You like Dags? Is that from that movie? I've never seen it.
Yep.
You've never seen Snatch?
No.
I had that soundtrack, and the soundtrack is so fucking banging.
Yeah. Does it have Oasis on it?
Yes.
It says, like, Massive Attack, and it's got all this, like, Bristol.
Fuck
it's,
you.
That's the joke here. I love Oasis.
No, it's no
Oasis.
Joke. She loves Oasis. Mm-hmm. It's all. I was just like, does it have Oasis on it? Because it's, like, set in Northern England. She's like, yes.
Of course it does.
Duh.
Yeah,
of course
it does.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
Are they from Liverpool as well, or Manchester?
Manchester.
Manchester. Is that the same place as Morrissey? Don't they fucking hate Morrissey?
I don't know.
Who doesn't, though, at this point, honestly?
He's kind of a buzzkill.
He's Mexican-American teens. They still really like Morrissey.
I love Morrissey so much.
Actually, he's a terrible person, but I love his music very much.
Yeah, it's, I feel like I read an article about that recently, about, like, what is it with Mexican kids and Morrissey and the Smiths? Like,
and that's just it. That's the whole thing. Like, it's like, what's with it?
Yeah. Like, it reminds me of that episode of Orange is the New Black, where they were, like, the two Hispanic girls were demanding an iPod from the guard that they were blackmailing, you know, and she's like, and make sure it has the Smiths on it.
I love it. I love those little mysteries of, like, subculture and stuff that that we can't really be privy to necessarily as white people. You could just be like, what's the deal? And they're like, you don't get it unless you get it, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind
of
cool.
Cool. The world is full of fucking wonder, isn't it?
I love a world full of wonder, guys. Do we want to take a quick break? Sure. Are we at breaking times?
I mean, sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
New York City.
We're back. I'm going to get some of that paste picante.
Get some of that sweet paste picante, thick and chunky salsa.
I can't.
Made in El Paso, Texas.
I haven't actually put it on record, but Katie's converted me to my brother and me. And now I'm like a McElroy stan forever.
Oh, they're so fun.
And so now everything I say is a sweet, sweet something or other.
Sweet,
and
sweet boys.
I love it. So they're really. I'm picking up on that cadence.
That's been such a good mental health thing for me, is to have old episodes of My Brother and Me. Because even in the new ones, they'll be like, well, shit definitely happened, but they won't talk about it in detail. They just talk about silly goofs in their own lives. And so it's nice to have something that you know you can delve into and be like safe. Because I've been listening to a lot of Jackie and Laurie show again. And I was like, ooh, it's not good for my mental health, because they just talk about what's happening politically, and they just talk about how much it sucks to be a woman in comedy a lot of the time. So I'm like, it does suck. It's also great, but it sucks a lot. Ooh. And it turns out it keeps sucking for a long time. Yeah. So
you can at least delve into, like, some safe, sweet goofs.
Some sweet, sweet McElroy goofs. With
Non-Threatening Boys magazine cover story.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I think in most industries outside of porn, it's pretty tough to be a woman.
It's probably pretty hard to be a woman in porn, too, though.
Yeah, but that's, like, one of the few industries where women actually make more than the men.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
A lot more value there.
What's it like in your industry?
Yeah. I mean, actually, there's a fair amount of female-owned businesses and just, you know, women-focused, like, gardens and things like that. There's a pretty decent spread of that in the cannabis industry. I think that women are more empowered to do things. Not that being an edibles maker isn't a wonderful profession, but women are starting to sort of push for more other kinds. You know, there's not a lot of female processors, for example. Like, pretty much every processor that I've worked with in Oregon and Washington, they're mostly male, the ones that run the different processing equipments and do different extractions. That's pretty much all male. Not very many ladies in that.
I was going to ask, how many different ways can you extract concentrates that
there's
you know
of? There's a bunch.
We're talking about weed, right?
Yeah, we're talking about weed.
Yeah, you did say the cannabis industry. I was just like, right.
Well, generally, you're looking at either a hydrocarbon extraction or a non-hydrocarbon. So hydrocarbon extraction is going to be where you're using a solvent to separate the, like, sort of essential compounds of the plant matter from the plant material.
You just, like, shoot it through?
Yeah, so that's going to be, like, your BHO, butane, hash oil, PHO, which is propane, CO2, which is obviously where you use a CO2 extraction method to make the oil.
The butane thing just kind of weirds me out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of, when I first got involved in sort of the weed scene and started dabbing, it's a little bit weird at first, but, I mean, if it's extracted and purged properly, I mean, it's less butane than if you were using a lighter to light your bowl.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thanks. You just put my mind completely at ease.
Yeah.
I worry about Katie's health sometimes. And I don't want her to have weird chemicals in your body.
Well, and
just
I think
the good kind.
It's definitely important to acquire your product from sources that you trust. So ideally it's going to be lab tested for, you know, residual PPMs of solvent. So if it's purged properly, you should have very low PPM numbers of butane or propane or whatever the solvent that is used in the extraction process.
Right on.
And then your non-hydrocarbon stuff's going to be like bubble hash, where you use ice and water to separate the plant resins from the material. So it's a mechanical separation.
She knows a lot of shit. Nikki's a weed scientist, basically.
Yeah, I started smoking weed probably 12 years ago now, which was later than most of my friends.
I think it's 2001 that you said. Yeah, it was pretty late. So that's 16 years ago.
I didn't start smoking regularly until I was probably like 24.
Okay.
23 or 24, yeah. I've just kind of become obsessed with it. I read High Times constantly, like, before I moved up to the Northwest. Like, I mean, I was involved in a lot of activist stuff in Austin. Had friends who grew weed, you know, made hash, edibles, things like that, just, like, on the black market, you know. And then I moved up here and just kind of got involved in the scene and decided that I really wanted to, I did hair for a long time and I was really burnt out on that. So I decided that I wanted to take all of my encyclopedic knowledge of pot that I had acquired over the years and actually like make some money with it. So yeah. So I now I do like brand development and sales development for a couple of different vendors in the cannabis industry. And I really like it.
Yeah. I mean, I went with her just to, just like a recreational shop in Southeast Portland, and it was gorgeous. Like, you walk in and it's just like all of the, there's fucking nugs that have like, they're clipped in an alligator clip on like a piece of reclaimed wood or some shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so snooty booty.
There's very, but like, I love well-designed it. Interiors.
Yeah. It was that place that we went was, mm-hmm. it was staffed by beautiful women, like 11s mm-hmm. out of 10 easily. Like, yeah. just gorgeous, gorgeous women who were very knowledgeable. And Nick just went up to them and was like, you know, I represent this company and we have these edibles. And the lady was like, oh, I love those edibles. And she's like, yeah, well, you know, we have, there's going to be these 15 milligram ones that are coming out soon. And that's for like the recreational industry. We have these for the medical industry. I'm just like, oh, just weed bit. It was just talking. I'm like, this is what heaven is like for me.
I'm sort of always working, like, which yeah. is cool in some ways and sometimes not so cool because, like, my social life and my work life are so, like, meshed together mm-hmm. now. Yeah. Especially because, like, I'm pretty active on social media and that's, like, sort of getting really involved with the Instagram and Tumblr stoner cultures is ultimately what helped me get my job that I have now.
There you go.
Just because I engaged with so many people that were already professionals in the industry and I was able to go to cups and conferences and events and just connect and network with a lot of people who are influential and really knowledgeable mm-hmm. about pot. And so I was able to parlay that network into getting the jobs that I have now. And I learned so pretty fast. So once I was able to get in with an actual job with a processing company working as a rep, I learned super quickly just like all the state regulatory stuff and just like even more technical knowledge about all the different processes that you can get different kinds of products from.
So cool.
Yeah.
I love learning on the job so much where yeah. it's just like, just let me in. I've got these soft skills that like you mm-hmm. maybe won't be able to teach me. Like, your personal skills, mm-hmm. like, interpersonal stuff, right? To be able to be engaging and warm and, like, especially as, like, a rep or doing any kind of sales, yeah. like, to build those connections really quickly. Immediately, as soon as, like, you came in the door, I was just like, oh, I like you, you're nice.
Thanks.
And so, those are the soft skills that you can't teach, so then once you get into the industry, it's like, everything else I will just, you know, absorb and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
I kind of can't believe sometimes that, I mean, it took me until my late 30s, but I finally got a job where I get paid to talk about pot pretty much all day. I mean, so I have sweet. To deal with really boring sales shit, just like any other job where you're pushing any sort of goods. Like, so that part of it is not always as fun. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, interacting vendor rep stuff with people that run the dispensaries is sometimes not always as fun as it could be, but mm-hmm. most of the time I really like my job and I'm really passionate about like consumer education because like so many people that are new to cannabis don't really understand, especially when it comes to edibles and concentrates and extracts, they don't really understand like what it all means. It can get technical really quickly. Like a bud tender starts talking to you about stuff and it's like they get overwhelmed, especially for
them
a little bit older. Yeah, like do you know what terps are?
No, I don't know what terps are.
So
we're gonna get into some glossary.
This has
stuff.
Become a big keyword in the sort of the cannabis scene in the last few years, and it's just short for terpenes. And it's the same compounds like you would find in hops for beer. And so it's what gives cannabis its taste and aroma profile.
Ah.
So like for example, when you drink a really hoppy beer that has different notes, so that comes from a similar kind of compound that would give weed sort of the taste and aroma.
Right on. You know so much.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. and you're able to explain it in a way that doesn't make me feel like a dummy. It just makes me feel engaged.
Consumer
about
education.
It.
That's what it's all about. Like,
he really
you know,
gives
so,
a shit about this stuff.
So a
that's
lot
why
you
I
know,
love her.
People are so focused on like the percentages of the product. So I won't touch it unless it has, you know, 17% THC or whatever. And that is important, but terpenes actually play a role in how the product will affect you. So especially when you're looking at like an extracted product like hash oil for dabbing or like the flower itself. The terpenes are going to make a big difference in how it affects you.
Interesting.
So things that have, for example, like limonene is like the kind of terpene that makes things really like citrusy and like lemony smelling. And so that's going to be found more in like usually the more uplifting kinds of varieties of cannabis.
It's almost like aromatherapy kind
it
of.
It really
of
is.
Way
yeah.
That...
yeah. And you can actually extract and isolate those terpenes from the cannabis. And so there are people who are doing distillations of terpenes. And so they literally, it's just like the flavor oils.
They call it
terp cannabis. And so you can add those to other buds, or you can put it on, you know, joints and things like that. Mm-hmm. You can add it to your dabs and it gives it different flavors and like profiles.
And it certainly makes you higher.
Yes, it can.
Yeah.
For sure. Terps are really strong too. It's actually a natural kind of solvent. You can mm-hmm. actually use limonene as a solvent just like you could butane or propane.
It's
there are people doing
I it. Did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a type of extract called LHO. You hardly ever see it, but that's a limonene.
That'd be very
hash
expensive,
oil.
I would think.
Yeah.
Because limonene would probably be hard to extract.
Pine sol, that's like a type of terpene, like that's a type of terpene that they extract, like that like piney, like really strong, that's actually a natural solvent.
Yeah.
That's wild.
I just like the idea of like, I know that there's now so much different kind of weed that I can't even say. I feel like such a nerd. There's so many different kind of weeds.
So then terpenes, like being knowledgeable about terpenes becomes even more like useful because it can help you, it sort of narrow down why you like certain kinds of weed and others not so much.
That you don't like.
I have like I would love to come to some place that actually can do like a profile for me or something like that to be like
what can you smoke that feels good?
It doesn't really work for me. Mm-hmm. It just like, it either makes me feel super fucked up or nothing at all.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure that there's, but it's like I only just smoke like what other people have, you know, and I've never investigated in my own. Like...
A lot of it can be trial and error, you know, but especially if you live in a place that has decent access where you can choose from different kinds. Like Leafly is a really good resource for looking at strains.
And they like putting on comedy shows too, apparently.
They, so.
They put on a free one that just people could just go to. And you just had to like, it was like almost like a timeshare. Like, hey, do you like weed and comedy? I'm like, I fucking really do, actually, both of those things.
Yeah.
The most you can like either of those things, I think.
Yeah, those, you know, those strains of indicas that just like that phrase couch lock where it's just like literally you can't move like because you're so sleepy and heavy. That's myrcene is like responsible for that, which is another type of terpene, and that is what really makes
sweet
you
mercy
super
that makes
sleepy.
Me go to sleep.
So
my
if you,
mercy.
Yeah. So if you know you get knowledgeable about what kinds of strains have a lot of myrcene or limonene or you know these different kinds of terpenes like that.
Yeah,
that
you can be a total weed like. Snob.
Like. I love it because I'm such a wine snob, and so like I love and coffee. I was more of a coffee snob before, but it's like I love getting into those rabbit holes of like the different varietals and how does it like
that's kind of like how I am about like, pot like I'm super interested. I mean there's a guy a friend of mine went to a conference in Portland recently and there was a guy there who has created like a weed sommelier program basically very much like it's like a course similar to being a wine sommelier and he had a little workshop that he did where he had different samples out and he was teaching you about like when you smell this nug where do you feel do you feel like sort of where do you like it makes your nose tingle usually when you like smell a fresh nug so you can actually sense those terpenes in different parts of your nasal cavity
almost like taste buds but smell buds
so like when you smell the nug if you feel a little more of a lower kind of a tingling sensation that's usually more of an indica whereas if it's like a higher tingly burny feeling that's more of a sativa
everything
dominant.
Is science it's pretty, all science.
Yeah, so I thought that was really interesting. I was like, I want to take that class. How much is it? $400. Well, maybe later.
It should be $420. Let's be honest with ourselves here.
But I think that's so cool because I do think that there's still like so much to learn and discover about the plant. I mean, we've only identified like somewhere between 100 and 150 of the compounds that are found in the plant, and there's possibly over 1,000.
And they, our brains are wired to take weed in and work with it. Like, there are natural cannabinoids that are released when you do hard exercise. And there's a lot of people that argue that if you consume pot before you exercise, as long as it's not, like, impeding your ability to do it, like, if you're not, like, I'm so high, I can't lift this weight.
Yeah, you don't want to be incapacitated.
But that increases, like, a runner's high, basically. Because a runner's high is essentially, like, natural cannabinoids.
Mm-hmm. See, I thought they were endorphins, which were more
as part of opioid. It. Like, there's a whole profile of chemicals that are released in your body and one of them is cannabinoids and there are natural opiates too but that's why those things are so like that's why people get into patterns and habits of those things and become you know like addicted to running or working out or whatever because it's like it gives them rewards
and there are types of sickness that are directly related to natural endocannabinoid deficiencies in the human body and so like actually like taking in cannabis from outside sources is actually very beneficial for that
it's like medical
well
it's medical.
Yeah it's so like I've seen so many people get over some really harsh stuff with marijuana, like just working in the downtown east side, like getting over really serious addictions and trauma and stuff to like move to medical marijuana instead of something harsher.
There are a lot of people that have moved off of opiate addiction for sure, meth, like all different kinds of you know, physically addictive substances by using cannabis. And you know, you could argue that is it healthy to replace one addiction with another? Well, maybe not, but if you're just looking from a harm reduction standpoint, like
one's
isn't that better than
I'm
being on methadone for the rest of your life?
No,
like
it's so
dealing
bad
with the methadone
body.
Treatment system is such a nightmare.
Weed doesn't really do it much negative to your body. Like you might gain weight.
Right. Vice had a really good segment about a retreat like in somewhere, I think it's in Pennsylvania. Where they do exactly that, where it's like a hardcore like 5 or 6 day detox, and then like you stay in this cabin, they help you work through your detox sicknesses, and they keep you medicated with dabs or you know vaporizing or you know just like they keep you as like RSO. They use a lot of RSO in the treatment.
I love RSO.
Big cycles of RSO to help you get through the sickness of the withdrawals.
RSO is the it's the like another word for it's the type of extraction for the phoenix tears that I use for sleep and for pain, which are so effective. Like it's so
and that's an isopropyl alcohol extraction, so it makes this really dark. dark, like, thick,
it's sticky,
oily.
It's very, yeah, it's very, it's, like, greasy, and it will stick to your teeth, which is why I put it on, by your recommendation, I put it on Starburst, because, like, the waxiness of the Starburst keeps it off your teeth enamel. Mm-hmm. It, like, just sticks to that, and then you mm-hmm. swallow it, and, like, some of it, it gets in through your salivary mm-hmm. area, and then some of it, like, in your body, and so it starts pretty quickly, like, within about 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's the best thing that's helped me sleep. Like, honestly, it is the thing that if I need to sleep and I'm not sleeping, if I have, like, one-tenth of the, like, because it comes in, like, this little non-injection like syringe. Yeah. And, like, one-tenth of it is enough to put me to sleep really well for 9 hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's a beautiful experience.
And it's fully activated, which makes a big difference. So you want those cannabinoids activated so you can get the full benefit. But it is very sedative, too. So it's taking if you want to go do things. It's for real serious pain and, like, insomnia mm-hmm. problems.
Yeah. And activated versus non-activated, like...
Yeah, because, like, so cannabis in its raw form, like, that's why, like, if you just ate a piece of weed, it doesn't mm-hmm. do anything. Because that's THCA, which is, like, in raw form, it's not as readily absorbed by your cannabinoid receptors.
Okay.
So you have to, through the process of decarboxylation, I always mess up that word, either by, you know, burning it, by smoking it or vaporizing it, or, like, heating it in the oven. So if you grind up pot and you heat it gently in the oven at, like, 200 degrees, that converts that raw THCA to THC so that you can use it in an edible then and it's fully activated. Mm-hmm. So you can't just, like, throw a handful of pot in with your brownies and expect it to...
Because I remember, like, when, back when I was making, like, weird edibles, it's, like, the weird shake that my friend's weird neighbor gave.
There's a lot of layers of weird in that.
It was a scene.
Sketchy.
I had a trash bag full of shake, and we, like, tried to sell it, like, in Kelowna and stuff like that. It was, like, really bad. But we made, like, terrible edibles with it. But it's, like, I learned, like, you have to put it in butter, because that will help, like, because it's fat soluble.
It has to be oil or alcohol.
Yep, right. But and really then, decarbing it first makes a huge difference before you even put it. Because, like, just cooking it in the butter is not enough. Like, you need to... gently heat it first, and then mix it into your butter.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah.
Very good
and
to know.
What about, like, would you do that before you put it into alcohol as well?
Yes, yeah. Ideally.
Because mm-hmm. my friend...
it just ensures, like, full conversion of that THCA mm-hmm. so that it can be fully usable.
This is very interesting.
Yeah, she used to put, like, lots of weed into a jar of brandy and then, like, boil that mm-hmm. and then just, like, let it sit for a couple of weeks and then put the brandy into sangria, and we had sangriana yeah. and it was...
If you're doing, like,
it was a disaster.
If you're
thinking
you're doing, like, Rick Simpson oil or something like that, than that, you're doing a chemical extraction by mm-hmm. soaking it in isoalcohol. So you don't necessarily need to decarb it before that. But if you're doing, like a fat-soluble kind of a thing, mm-hmm. like a butter, making coconut oil or butter, you would want to decarb it first.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Why don't you, I know what it is, but why don't you tell us about dabbing?
Oh, so, I also had a question just before.
Sorry, for sure.
On your, you said something about there are certain illnesses that are related to having a lack of cannabinoids?
Yes, and they're, I forget the exact name of them, but it is an autoimmune, there's like two autoimmune disorders that are directly related to a deficiency of endocannabinoids.
Yeah, I'd be so curious about that, because there are so many... Maybe. There are so many interesting, like, there are illnesses
and
things...
I know people with lupus find a lot of relief.
Yeah, and like... a lot of sort of autoimmune and, like, allergy-related stuff that are going up versus, you know, environmental, blah, 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 mm-hmm. and, like, reintroducing, like, parasites into people's systems or other kinds of, like, more sort of rebuilding your gut flora is a huge thing, mm-hmm. and then
yeah.
to also have, like, a link to that kind of
it's
cannabinoid
thing. Yeah, it's really part of holistic medicine, I mm-hmm. think, and if we don't consider cannabis as a legitimate medicine, we're really throwing ourselves under the bus, mm-hmm. for
absolutely.
Sure, because it's so good in terms of, like, being able to help people sleep and being able to help people, like, just sort of get through the day. Like, those two things are so important, and I don't think nobody who has never struggled with that understands what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ability to get up and go do a thing is taken for granted by it. I think a lot of people who just think that they've got, you know, I've got cojones, I go out and I do my thing, and that's what's important, and everybody mm-hmm. else can do that if they put their minds to it. It's like, well, no, because not everybody's coming from the same place.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that, like, for me, particularly as a person who's used cannabis for a long time, recreationally and medically, for me, it helps me, it really just helps me sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It just, like, pulls that sort of, it takes the hamster wheel sort of, like, off its little pinion, and just, like, lets me relax a little mm-hmm. bit, because it just makes me feel like, okay, I don't actually have to do all the things.
Yeah.
It calms the spiral in a big way, and I think that that's something that I've always looked for in my life. And so I've always come back to weed. It was something that I wasn't allowed to do in a relationship that I had, which was embarrassing, like, when I look back on it. But the relationship I was in between 16 and 19, my partner was very anti-drug, but very pro-alcohol. And I don't really understand it. But I remember I smoked pot once during that three-year relationship, and he freaked out.
That made you gay, right? Immediately?
I turned 100% gay because of that.
Smoked pot one time, and I'm gay now.
And it made me gay, and now I'm gay. And so that's it. We're done. But yeah, basically. But I mean, I look back at one thing I'm thinking of, like, I really want to know what everybody's first pot experience was. I think that would be an interesting one, because my... You're like, ugh.
Oh, no, I've had some fine...
I'm just thinking, like, the first time I ever smoked it was, I don't think I want my parents to know this, but I might just let them know that I had a babysitter give it to me when I was 10 or 11. And they'll know exactly who it is. If they hear this, I will not say who it was, but I know that, that it will be immediately obvious who it was. But that was the first time I tried it. And then I tried it again when I was 13. That was the first time I ever got actually high. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, the first time I was ever really super duper mega ultra high was I was hanging out with Bex at their place in sort of like near Sunbury Park in North Delta, and sitting in an armchair, and their mom got home from her job, and her mom had her mom sadly has passed away since then, but had multiple sclerosis and was working at the mall, and like rolled up her fucking ramp into the house and was like, what's going on with everybody? And I'm like sitting in an armchair and I feel like I'm keening to the left, like I'm flying over the world, and I'm just like we're fine, we're good, everything's great. But I just remember it was exactly like being at Epcot Center in Florida, where you fly over Canada. There's like a Canada flyover thing that was made in the late 60s early 70s, and it's so old school. That's exactly what being high that time felt like. The first time I was ever truly high, I was soaring in an armchair over like the Canadian savannah, which we don't have, by the way. We have prairie. So that's what I really remember from the first time being, like, super, super high. And then that time that I got high while I was with that boyfriend, it was with Jasta and her friend. And we were in a car getting stoned in a Denny's parking lot. And I sat down in the booth at Denny's and I said, I will have the sampler, please. Thank you. And the second the server went away, I turned to my friends and I said, my legs feel like cotton tree trunks. And that's become a thing that gets said quite frequently these days. That's awesome. My legs feel like cotton tree trunks. Which is exactly what it feels like when you get really high for, like, the first time in a long time. So what was your first time getting stoned, Nikki?
I was 19. I was a lot older than most people, I think. And I was at a party at my friend's lake house, which is a glorified way of describing a trailer in the middle of the woods, in Gun Barrel City, Texas.
That's hilarious.
I say unto you.
And someone built a bong out of like an Ozarka water bottle, you know, with like foil and like cut out the hole on the side, you know, and they just like handed it to me.
Yep.
And it was just like shitty Mexican brickweed, which is like pretty much all you could get in Texas back then, really. This of was course. Like 1999. It's a long time ago. And I just remember I was already kind of drunk when I smoked the weeds, so I got super sick, which, I mean, duh, of course, and I don't remember liking it very much. I don't think I really actually enjoyed smoking pot until I tried it again when I was, like, 21. I didn't touch it again for a long time, but then I was like, somebody actually got me, like, good weed. Like, it was White Widow, I remember, and, like, I smoked some of it when I went home, and Kaz, my ex-boyfriend at the time, was very anti-weed, and so I had to, like, hide it from him, and I remember I was at school one day, and he, like, called me, he was like, I found your stash, and I was like, what are you talking about? Your weed stash, and I just started laughing. I literally was buying it from one of my teachers that I was going to school with at the time. And
that's so funny.
Dude, it's just... It was a different time back then.
This was a different time.
And then, you know, eventually he later on ended up becoming just as much of a stoner as me, so.
Oh, naturally. What choice do you have, really?
But he was very judgy about it at the beginning.
What a dink.
Yeah. What about you?
That's funny. I was probably, like, 18, and, like, I had already graduated high school. Like, I grew up on the Sunshine Coast, and there was always this, like, everyone grows weed, and it's, like, a hippie place or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I had the sort of D.A.R.E. program shit kind of drilled in, and I was very straight edge all through high school and was always, like, the designated driver, taking care of people, whatever. And there was a few like, really brilliant people in my high school that smoked a lot of pot. And I was just like, they're so brilliant. They say such brilliant things. And then they're, like, so burned out most of the time. And, like, what burnouts? What skids? Yep. Like, that kind of thing. So I'm like, it's not for me because I'm brilliant.
Those are the exact reasons, like, that my ex gave for not wanting to smoke pot.
Right?
Then.
Which I didn't really realize. Like
everybody
anyway.
I know that smokes pot is a total burnout. Well, that's their choice. Like,
So I tried it, like, behind a building at university or whatever with a few friends. And, like... Yeah, just remember, like, it's never really done a lot for me, and usually when I smoke weed, I'm also drinking, and so then it doesn't work very well.
Right.
And so I'm not a huge fan. The first time I got, like, really fucked up high was, again, the, like, weird friend with the weird neighbor with the bags of shake. And they made this cake supposed to be a lemon cake, but it was green.
Oh.
And lemon cake. Like, a little bit of it and was just, like, yeah, what you're saying about, like, being, like, couch bound or whatever. But it was scary and we all felt, like, so sick and so,
yeah,
like...
that's not good.
We were at a party and I was stuck there. And I was just, like, I never want to, like, not... be able to, like, have all my faculties. Like, it just doesn't...
I've definitely been in those situations where I've just been sitting there, like, so high that I'm like, I don't even want to say anything because I'm afraid I'll embarrass myself.
Oh, no. Quiet.
Yeah, it gives me, like, a little bit of anxiety. Like, not as much as my partner, apparently. It makes him, like, feel like he's going to have a heart attack.
Yeah, some
basically.
People have that terrible
loves
reaction
the smell
to
it,
it
right?
Loves the smell
loves
of it.
Loves the smell.
And, so, like, but I've... whenever I smoke it, I feel like I can either, like, I smoke so much of it and nothing happens. You know?
Right.
Or... I smoke a little bit if I'm, like, having some wine or whatever, and then, yeah, it totally
goes
south.
This reminds me of that episode,
like...
of Broad City where Abby gets, like, too stoned and is, like, yelling at the cardboard cutout at the coffee store.
I'm not a mom! I'm not a mom! Yeah. I'm such an Abby.
But, like, I definitely, like, would smoke weed at parties kind of thing, but I was always just, like, I never bought my own.
Right.
It was only just if anyone else had any... You know, so that's my journey with that. It's, like, only a few times did I ever buy my own weed, and it was, like, off of a friend or something like that.
I wish
that.
I had a tab of all of the money that I've spent on weed over the years.
You don't
both in
know.
The black market and in the legal
one. Oh, you don't God. Even
so
want to know
much.
That, right?
Yeah.
Like, it would be a lot.
You know, in the state of Oregon, they actually allow you to write off your medical marijuana purchases on your state taxes. Like,
you
can deduct them as a medical expense
Great.
On
That's
your Oregon
so smart.
State taxes.
If it's medicine,
yeah.
then it should be.
Some of the dispensaries will just, like, print you, like, a thing of, like, all your transactions from the year, and that's kind of fun to be
I
like,
could probably
shit,
figure out how much I've spent if I think about this really carefully. So if I go, let's see, I'm just thinking about this right now. You guys keep talking. I'm going to calculate.
Like, yeah, I was way more into, like, psychedelics and stuff than
right on.
Ever.
I do like mushrooms every now and then. Those are very mind-expanding. Mm-hmm. Don't really care for acid very much.
Yeah.
Too much.
But, like, yeah. So, like, now talking about all of this, I'm like, oh, I should, like, experiment a little bit more with, like, finding the right weed for me, you know? Like, what is
what,
a good...
What is the right weed
what
for
What is a
you?
Good fit? And what do I even want to use it for? Like, that's my thing, right? Where it's, like, I have no... Like, I sleep really well.
Are you familiar with CBDs? Like, have you heard a little bit
yes.
about the CBD stuff and, like, what you know what they are? And,
not
like...
super well. I've heard about it, but...
So it's just, you know... there's all these cannabinoid compounds within the plant, right? Of which THCA, THC, like, CBN is another one. So CBD is the one that's, like, hoops super hot, and you hear people talking about it a lot now. And that's one of the non-psycho active compounds in the plant.
And it's just like the body feel kind
it's,
of thing,
Yeah, that's
or?
The one that gives you more of the body effects. Yeah, so it's really good for like pain, spastic disorder, sleep. So you can get strains that are incredibly low in THC but very high in CBD. And those are like the ones that they'll use for the kids that have epilepsy where they'll make tinctures and things like that for them to medicate the kids with. So they don't get high, but it has a really great effect on whatever their epileptic disorder or seizure disorder is. So I have friends that are super sensitive to the effects of THC in terms of the anxiety and the paranoia, but if they consume something that's, you know, no more than maybe 3% THC, but very high in CBD, they get all the good effects that they want in terms of the anti-anxiety and the calming and the sleep, but without all of the paranoia and the edginess, like, that you can get from the THC.
All very interesting.
Yeah, I would,
You'd probably benefit from something that was, like, 10% THC and then more CBD, because then you'd still be, like, a little bit, like, ooh.
Because I like weed for, like, let's just be chill and giggly and fun.
Yeah, so, like, just a little bit would be great.
I would actually even go lower THC than that, to be honest with you. Yeah,
just
I would go for something that's, like, 15% or more CBD and something that's no more than 5-8 THC.
I'll keep my eyes peeled to see if that, and we could,
like,
just do experiments.
But I mean, the strains are a little different up here in BC, but like a Sour Tsunami is one of the really good ones.
They have great names.
Weed names are so funny.
They're so funny. Sour Tsunami.
This beautiful medicinal experience that, like, it's really important to, like, treat it as, like, medicine and it's sacred.
Oh,
like,
it's...
Sour Tsunami.
Sour, purple power thunderfuck or something.
Yeah, Alaskan thunderfuck is, like, one of my favorite strain names of all time.
And you know what a really good one is that's very local to here and it's hard to get anywhere but in BC? Is Texada Time Warp. Have you had it before?
No, I haven't.
I'll see if I can get some for you next time and, like, even just preserve it till
That's
the next
awesome.
Time you're here because I think you would really like it. It's
I'm
great.
Into
it's,
it. I love
it's like
regional
strains. It's a very, like, sativa-y one, but it's, like, it's quite strong. It's really good.
It.
It's good for hippies. So I calculated how much I've spent, and it's between $15,000 and $19,000.
Over the course of how long?
Over the course of probably 12 years.
I want to say, because I started smoking pot seriously once I was 19, and I'm almost 32. Mm-hmm. So that's 9 years. So I'm really looking at, like, a 12-year span here of where I've... The last few years, I've spent quite a bit, and prior to that, I was spending maybe $50 to $75 a month, where now it's more like $200, probably. So I should probably cut back to $100, but I do really like pot a lot.
That's one of the best things about, like, my gigs now is that I get a lot of, like, free products. So I gotta get in on that somehow.
Like, it's I gotta trade skills for things. Like, I gotta make a fucking dinner for people who sell pot and, like, work that out somehow.
I'm fortunate to work for a processing company that hooks me up.
But, like, whenever I go to visit you, I find, like, A, I can buy recreational cannabis there, which is great, and like there's always gear at your place to do dabs and stuff. Oh, we were gonna talk about dabs.
I was gonna ask you once you finished your sentence.
Let's talk about dabs.
So dabbing, it's, you know, it's what all the kids are into now. So it's just a way of vaporizing cannabis extracts, basically. So it comes just basically like, because you only need a dab. That's like sort of the idea.
It's like in some kind of like an oil or like a solution of some kind.
Yeah. So usually people are dabbing what's called either shatter or crumble. Those are just different textures.
I've heard about shatter.
Yeah. So that's just where it looks like glassy amber, like very stable, kind of hard, glassy kind of substance, right? And then sometimes it's like kind of like crumbly, sugary, waxy looking. So you just, you have like a little bong. Usually they're smaller than like a bong you would use for flower. And it's got an attachment on it called a nail. And it's usually made of quartz or titanium. Most people like quartz now, myself included. It's just clean and tasting. And you just heat that up with a little torch. And then you wait until it's the appropriate temperature. And then you put your little bit of extract in there. And then you inhale it through the bong. And so rather than like lighting a bowl of flower like you would for a regular weed, you're just dabbing it on a hot nail. So I don't know if you ever seen anybody do knife hits back in the day. Yeah, it's like a very nice, grown-up, scientific way to do knife hits, really.
And you would get a real... The terps would be really flavorful. Flavor. Like, you would taste the flavor of it without the smoke.
That's nice.
Because it's, like, vapor. Like, you'll still cough because it's a lot going in all at once. Like, it's like a high dose all in one. And then you get very high. I love it. For me, because it is very, like... it still keeps my sort of consciousness just slightly on top of me being high, because I'm very high, but I'm also just kind of like, I could still answer any number of questions that someone has for me, because it's like when I smoke a lot of flower, I feel oily and sticky. Yeah. Like I get stuck to the, I get couch bound, couch stuck. And when I'm taking dabs and stuff, I still feel much more energetic, I find. But I'm higher, even. Like, I'm
it
just
is a more
goofed.
Functional high. To me, personally, that's not true of everyone.
But I like that, like, the smoke of it is what really, it's like, it fucks my throat up all the time. Like, it's just not...
Yeah, and especially when you get to a point like I did, and I think you did too, where you're just, like, smoking bowl after bowl, or, you know, I could smoke an entire joint on my own and not really be all that high. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the point where it's good to consider maybe moving over into... And not everybody wants to dab with a rig and have that whole setup. Like, they have the little pens and things that you can get that make it easy for you to inhale concentrates as well. So, because not everybody... You know, people, a lot of people who buy extracts are... Most of them are actually not using a dabbing setup. People are just a little freaked out by the blowtorch thing, right? Yeah. So they're a little like, I don't really know about that. But pens are really easy. Most people really like pens because they're clean, they're convenient. It's like you don't have to... There's no heating anything up. It's
just push a button. Sort of like a vape pen kind of.
Yeah, exactly. So it's cool. Like you can do any number of futuristic scientific things. You don't just have to be like smoking out of a Sprite can behind the bike racks at school, right? Yes. Like it's gotten a little bit fancier.
And I mean, and the labs are really pretty incredible. Like how high tech they are. Like one of the companies that I work for has a very impressive. Like probably, I mean, I'd say it's probably at least $800,000 of equipment in there. It's, I mean, and they have to be inspected by fire marshals and chemical engineers, and I mean they have to really jump through a lot of hoops to have like a professional state licensed operation, and it's really impressive, just like all of the equipment. I mean, it's like some of it's kind of some Breaking Bad looking kind of shit, like because there's like rotovapping machines, which is like this big glass, you know, like Bunsen thing spinning in like a solution you know, to cool it, and like they're like
science.
Separating different chemicals.
Weird
and,
weed science
So,
bongs and dabs and something good.
You guys are totally like peer pressuring me through science to try weed.
No, don't try weed.
It's not for everyone. I'm totally one of the, I mean, some people who are super into weed, like, just cannot even, like, imagine the fact that, like, for some people, weed is no good. And I think that that's silly, like, because it's like, not everything is going to be for all people. Like, some people, like, one of my best friends back in the South, like, if he smokes weed, he will, like, projectile vomit. It makes him super sick. And he's been like that since high school. It's just something about his body chemistry, mm-hmm. he will shovel cocaine up his nose all night long. But do not get anywhere near him with pot because he will get super sick.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah,
it's just, I'm pretty sure it's if you shovel cocaine up my nose, I'll just die.
Right. Well, and then certain people who have like schizophrenia or certain other kinds of mental disorders, as I'm sure you're well aware of, they probably shouldn't smoke pot. It can be really, you know, not, it can be counterproductive for whatever their mental illness is, especially if they have certain kind of medications. I mean, it's just always good for people to be really honest with their health practitioners if they have those kinds of issues going on. Be honest with your doctor. That's what they're there for. Don't lie to them. They can't throw you in jail. Like, even if you're in a place where weed is illegal, like, be honest with your doctor so that they can take care of you.
Coolest fuck doctor who I talked to about this. And she's like, do you do any drugs other than alcohol? And I was like, hell yeah.
Or 20 for life.
I think I said, hell yeah. She's like, hell yeah. I was like, I use cannabis for sleep for recreation. She's like, okay, well, like, how much do you smoke? And I was like, probably like about a half ounce to a 3/4 ounce a month. And she's like, so like an average amount for a pot smoker. I was like, I like you. She's like, so what I want you to do is to avoid smoking it, like vape it and eat it. That's fine, but don't smoke it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you're a cool doctor. You're a very cool doctor. She didn't prescribe it to me or anything, but she's like, if you want to keep doing that and it's working for you, go ahead and keep doing it. Just like, don't smoke it because we don't know like how bad that is for your lungs, basically. Yeah. So I was like, great, cool. Mm-hmm. And that's a medical doctor, everybody. Right. So everyone's allowed to smoke pot now. I found out.
Yeah.
It's cool.
She says it's cool, guys. Yeah.
She says it's cool.
I lucked out with my doc, too. She used to work for a VA hospital in the South, and so she had a lot of patients PTSD. That were PTSD sufferers, even though in the state that she worked in, they had no medical access. But she definitely had patients who were using cannabis to, like, self-treat some of their symptoms.
And amazing.
Also, she said she told me her brother used to grow pot, so she's just like, whatever about it.
You know? Fuck, yeah.
She doesn't care, really. She's like, I mean, I would rather you not burn it, but, like, I trust you to make good decisions for yourself.
Good-ass doctor, guys.
Yeah, that's really
harm
nice.
Reduction's
yeah.
important.
Mm-hmm.
So let us look to the thesis of things for the day. Mm-hmm. You know, we've decided things are kind of fucked up, right? Things are a little bit fucked up.
So just smoke weed every day.
So just smoke
that's
weed every
what,
day.
That's not what you
They're
know.
Gonna take my weed away from me for my cold dead hands, I swear. Like, I don't care if they make it illegal tomorrow. Like, me and my friends are, I'll go back underground.
Your name
again.
Is Cannabis
like,
Heston?
I'll just keep doing what I do, you know? Like...
So we have to just keep working is basically what it comes down to, is that we need to keep taking care of each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Keep looking to the future and how we can love our fellow human beings.
Right. Look after your neighbors.
How can we get rid of more Nazis?
Yes.
Preferably in the least violent way possible, but we're willing to consider it.
Mm-hmm.
And take care of yourself, especially if that includes cannabis as part of your self-care routine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Make sure that you're checking in with doctors who know how to help you with that.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Nugs.
Definitely.
For example.
Yes.
Go see Dr. Nugs in the back of a school bus. He'll give you a weed card and you'll be good to go. Apologies to Ron Funches. Well, guys.
That was delightful.
That was a really good time. I feel like I got some stuff off my shoulders.
Me too.
Good. Mm-hmm. Brush the dirt off.
Thanks for having me on, guys. That was
Let's
fun.
Let's go smoke some weed.
Yes.
All right. Woo!
Yes.
I probably won't. Okay, bye.